Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Waukesha Racing Services does. And they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Waukesha Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services at waukeshawracing.com.au.
Welcome to the Special Stage Rally Podcast on the Motorsport Podcast Network. We're here thanks to the Rally Sport Magazine subscribers. So thank you all for subscribing on our website. You really make what we do so much better and so much more in-depth as the rally season continues on. It's Rally Week in the World Rally Championship. The famed Rally to Portugal is on the cards this weekend. With me to chat about it on the podcast is Scottish rally journalist Luke Burry. Welcome, Luke.
Welcome, Luke. It sounds as an echo there, doesn't it? But 2 weeks to be on the podcast. Thanks very much for having me. It's a great honour.
Thanks so much for your time. Your knowledge and experience across the WRC will help explain the Rally to Portugal a little bit better to some of our listeners. There's plenty of topics that we can talk about of the event itself, but on this podcast, typically we go back before we go forward. We'll talk about a couple of the happenings of previous weekends. Last weekend particularly was the second round of the European Championship on the Canary Islands. What did you follow across the weekend, Luke? You're sort of in the time zone that works somewhat better during the weekend to follow some of these events. What did you make out of it, particularly the two Frenchmen at the front?
Yeah, time zone's definitely a bit easier for me in Europe. And actually being in the UK, this isn't on exactly the same time as me, so I had no excuses. But yeah, it was a ferocious battle, I have to say. I think a lot of us probably expected Johan Bonato to be up there at the front, given his speed on tarmac and that he won the event last year. But Matthew Franceschi to be 2.8 seconds off him, and a surface he's openly said isn't his favourite, I think is very, very menacing indeed for his championship prospects. And I think the fact that Paddon was sixth shows you just how competitive the ERC is this year, because he was only, I think, about half a minute down on the lead, maybe even less. And to be down in sixth because of that is a real indictment as to how difficult it is to get the top positions there at the minute.
Exactly. 40 seconds off the rally win. You might think you'd get second, you might get third, but not even sixth place would come into your mind when you think about being 40 seconds off the lead. It highlights where the European Championship is at the minute. Before we've hit record, I've had a quick look at the results overall across the weekend in the Canary Islands. 20 cars were within a second per kilometre of the rally win. That's remarkable when it shows the talent of the drivers around, and also, dare I say, the quality of the Rally 2 car and the Rally 2 regulations, if we should go there.
Yeah, it's a slightly contentious topic there, isn't it? But you're right. I think there's a lot of different cars in that mix. There was Citroën, Skodas, the old Ford, Hyundai. So, and they were all within that. I didn't notice as many as 20, to be fair. That's an incredible bit of research from you there. And a great stat, which, as just sort of repeat myself, it does just show how competitive it is. Any small mistake would be punished. But I do have to give a quick shout out to Alejandro Cachon as well, who was very unfortunate to have a puncture on the first day, but fought back all the way to third. So I think he could possibly have been a rally winner in his Toyota had it not been for that. But obviously the red mist was down, I think, on the final day to claw back those positions. But a great fight back against such a competitive field from him.
Yeah. Our listeners would be interested in what Max McRae did on the weekend in the junior ERC. Clearly, Max has got experience in Australia and he grew up here, and his early years of rallying were here. He finished fourth in the junior section. The event will be part of the World Championship next year as well, as was announced not so long ago. I think it'll be welcomed and I think the event will be a success. Do you share that same opinion? I know the roads are very, very nice to watch, and I'm sure they're very nice to drive as well.
I do share that opinion, yeah, because Catalunya in Spain was always one of the most popular rallies for not just the local fans, but people from, I guess, particularly European countries, and speaking a lot about the UK again, because it's what I know very well. They would all come over to the event, and it was always a great rally of hospitality and atmosphere and just vibes, I guess. I'd be struggling to see this being any different, because, I mean, coming to the Canary Islands is never a bad thing anyway. So for a rally, it's kind of like the dream sort of trip away, isn't it? But yeah, the roads are, and the scenery and the views we get are spectacular. Clearly, it's shown it can provide an entertaining rally. So yeah, I think it'll be a very exciting addition. I was actually surprised there were less crews, even doing the recce for next year potentially. Yeah. But I guess there's that many onboards available now that that can probably make up for lost time. But and obviously Portugal's only this week as well, so quite a tight schedule to jump and everything else. But yeah, I think it will be a super interesting rally to come in next year for sure.
Very much so. There might be a tourism board that's looking for some jobs. A rally and then a holiday might work perfectly for a lot of those Europeans and even non-Europeans who might want to go over and visit the rally. One of the news items that came across our desk this week, particularly today, was that the Otago Rally has a new date for next year already. It's a new date, clearly from a new season, but it's a week earlier than what it was this year. April 4th to 6th is the date that the Otago will be held next year. That's more or less same, but it allows them to bring a more of a festival atmosphere in the South Island of New Zealand. There's a couple of other events that are lumped in around there, one in Invercargill, one also in the Southern Island. I think the day change of 1 week doesn't really matter too much, but really, whenever the Otago Rally is put on, I think people will be happy to go and visit regardless of what time of year.
Otago is definitely one of those rallies that is world famous. I know that's an easy phrase to throw around, but it's an event that I've been dying to go to for years, I'll be honest. Yeah. I've always seen this amazing footage and stories come out about the roads, and I think particularly hearing how positive and gushing Chris Meek was about them this year. And he's not a man to mince his words. Like, he doesn't say things for sake of saying them, for sure. So when he says that, you genuinely know he's telling the truth, he's being honest. And yeah, he was absolutely in love with the place, wasn't he? So to see that shine through, I think it just highlights what a gem they've got. It's the brilliant roads. Obviously, I think you struggle to find a bad road anywhere in New Zealand, but cracking organisation. And yeah, I think there's always a great atmosphere whenever a season kicks off as well. It always tends to attract a bit of an extra bit of buzz.
Definitely. The New Zealanders go into the second round of their national championship this weekend. It's Rally South Canterbury. That's the event that they'll be all at this weekend. Expect it to be fast. It's one of the fastest events in New Zealand, let alone in the world. It'll be hard to beat Hayden Padden, of course. He's gone back to the future in some ways. He's bringing out his i20 AP4. That will have a higher top speed than the Rally 2 car. And maybe the Rally 2 car isn't quite at 100% given it was battered and bruised after the Otago Rally. So they'll go to battle in their national championship this weekend. And then the entry list for the Forest Rally, the next round of the Australian Championship, has been announced. Really same again. The top 10 of the entry list is very similar to what was in Canberra. Dylan King is a man in the sixth seed, who'll be getting to grips with his new Yaris AP4 that was an ex-factory Toyota car. So he might be a dark horse on the ball-bearing gravel that is everywhere in Western Australia. Do you know much about the ARC, Luke? I did give a quick summary there in terms of the top 10 and where it's at, but do you see much of it over in the UK from where you're based?
I'll be honest, the sort of bulk of my knowledge is from conversations with Harry Bates. Yes. He's obviously not a bad man to speak to about the championship, given how successful him and his team have been, but that's kind of where I understood the most. But I really like the format of, I guess, sprint shorter shootout rallies and the longer ones. I think it creates it probably upsets some, but it creates a bit of a different dynamic, a bit of a different tactic, I guess, to winning champs, which is always interesting. And I think it's a lot more competitive than maybe if you're looking for the headlines only, you check out the Neil Bates Toyotas and they're like the cars generally winning. But as with any championship, there's always so many drivers in there that are properly, I guess, stars of the future, which I hate using that phrase. It's very cliche. But I think it is true. I'm interested, and we'll get to this, I guess, later on, but I'm very curious to see, I guess, the benefit that Lewis Bates will have from his time over somewhere in Europe this week before he comes back home. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of helps him, I guess, in his battle against his brother.
Seat time is just so important. And when you've got a 5 or 6 round national championship, in terms of what people in Europe and people doing the WRC do, the seat time is just not there for a solely national championship driver. So if you're to get 320, 330 competitive kilometres in a WRC event the week before you go to a national round, it's got to count for something, doesn't it?
Massively. And it's, again, another cliche to use, but this is the really tricky thing for for rally drivers, it's something that we all understand as rally fans, but for those of us that maybe aren't or don't know so much, it's not like footballers or tennis players or anybody that can go out and kick a ball, hit a racket in their spare time. Trying to get time in one of these cars away from your competitive environment is nigh on impossible. So yeah, it's a massive opportunity, I think, for Lewis to be in Portugal this week. And I think it'll be both great for him, as we said, for seat time, but also, I guess, to potentially, and I know it's not going to be about setting the world alight, but at the odd stage, he feels comfortable, he builds it into the rally, showing, I guess, what he can do in terms of speed as well, and up against some of the very best drivers in the world in that WRC2 class, has to be said.
Definitely. We'll get to Lewis a bit further later on, because his competition is so, so big, like you were just saying. But we'll cover off on the Rally 1 category, the event itself. Tell me, where do you think it stands up at the minute, the WRC? We've got 7 gravel rallies in a row, I think, off the top of my head. 7 before we go to any sort of tarmac. How do you see it going over the next few rounds, maybe even towards the end of the season?
It's the crucial part of the year now, isn't it? I think you always hear people talk about the start of the season. There's always anomalies. You've got Monte Carlo's unique with its sort of potentially icy roads. This year wasn't so much, but Sweden obviously on snow. Safari is Safari. It's a different complete strategy to win there altogether. I guess now Croatia is a tarmac rally that maybe you see a bit more of equalization of performance. But yeah, as you said, 7 gravel rallies on the bounce. This is where, I guess, the driver's season will be won or lost. And I think it's where road position is going to become a much bigger talking point than we've had already, particularly when you've got this, should we call them, unique set of circumstances now in WRC with the points division on a Saturday and then the extra on a Sunday. Yeah. I think it's going to be quite difficult for those running at the head of the championship to score well on Saturday. And then depending on how much they struggle, and maybe how well others further down the road order will do, that could then also make it more difficult for them to be in the best place to score on Sunday. So that, I think, is the big thing that I think we're going to discover, is how that tactically is all going to work. But it's looked mighty close between Thierry Neuville and Elvin Evans all year long, it has to be said. I think the one driver that's lagging a bit behind where we all thought was Oleg Tanak, but then this road position argument could come to his favour. He'll start 4th in Portugal, which is 2 places down in Evans, 3 on Neuville, which isn't the best place to be, but it's far from the worst. So that'll give him an edge. And yeah, I guess for him, it'll depend on just how well he can get on top of his hind eye once he's now back in that car after a year away at M Sport.
Road position is always a topic that gets talked about and talked about and talked about, because there's part-timers coming back. Calle Rovanperä and Sebastian Ogier are competing this weekend. They've got great road positions. And then you brought up a fantastic point about the fact that if you're trying to get points on Sunday, your finishing position at the end of Saturday dictates where you start on the road on Sunday. So if you have a horrible Friday and Saturday, as Thierry Neuville might, as Oit Tanak might, you then have a bad position to try and get points on Sunday. So it's a snowball effect. And as we've found over the past few events, the points gaps aren't so different. Maybe that was by design from the FIA. We don't know, but I don't see, it being an issue that's going to be resolved anytime soon with regards to road position, and particularly for the guys at the front.
Yeah, I think I would be surprised. And I'm sure actually there may be some quotes already from Thierry acknowledging this, but I'd be very surprised if he in particular isn't quite frustrated by the appearance of both of Toyota's part-time world champions. Because both they're running further down, they're going to be menacing, very difficult to beat. Both very successful in Portugal anyway. Both have won from the front, let alone the rear. So they would have to be the danger men. But you then got Dani Sordo, who's the last Rally 1 car on the road, who was 2nd in Portugal last year, so clearly still has all the skill that he's had for the past 20 years at the top of the WRC. So an incredible career for Sordo, has to be said. A slight segue there, but to still be, and I know he's not doing it that much anymore, but to still be this competitive after so long, I think is mightily impressive for me.
Can he be competitive in the 2024 calendar year? He's had a long time out of the car, and we saw how difficult it was for Andreas Mikkelsen to get back in that I-20. Not necessarily from a car setup point of view. I'm sure there's the issues that he's dealing with. But although Danny's used to the Rally 1 car, one event out of these cars makes it hard the next time you get into it. I'm not sure how he's going to go having more than 6 months out of the car and trying to get back up to speed in a team that needs points for their manufacturer's race.
It's a good question, actually, and a very good point to make. I guess he did have a day. I can't remember if he did all the stages. I think he might have done that. The latest Portuguese national round, he had some time in the car, but obviously that's competing against no one, isn't it? It's essentially testing, but on a rally, so it's better than nothing. But you're right, compared to everybody else, he is going to be down on seat time. I think in other years where we didn't have drivers as good as Cowley and Seb further down the road order, I think it would be a bit easier for Danny. I think because of that, he might struggle more, because what he's always been great at is making great use of his road position and maintaining that position once the rally goes on. So yeah, it'll be tricky, but I don't know. Sordo's that good and he's that experienced that I don't see it being too big a problem. But you're absolutely right that, yeah, as we were saying at the top of this, seat time is king, isn't it? And to be down on it heading into rally, it's not going to help him compared to others, for sure.
Toyota have brought four cars to Portugal. Their four men are clearly some of the best in the world, and their car is arguably the best in the world as well. They just haven't got the best of it this year in terms of Alvin Evans and the championship race that he's fighting. It's the first time they've brought four cars this year. Luke, do you know why they've done that from your research and your understanding?
I don't know 100%, but I have theories.
We all have theories on lots of things, don't we?
We all do, yeah. Not many of them can be substantiated. But, yeah, I think... One, I know that there was always a plan at some point in the year to have four cars. I was initially, to be fair, surprised to see it happen in Portugal so early in the year. But I do wonder, this is what I don't know. I don't know how the sort of decisions are made. I don't know how much of it is Toyota's pure decision or how much of it is down to Cali or Seb sort of suggesting what they would like to do in terms of preference. But for this one, I think given the way the championship now works in terms of the manufacturer series, and Toyota's had 1-2 finishes on some quite a few rallies now, and they haven't actually really gained much over Hyundai in the manufacturer series because of these, I guess, the quirk of the Sunday point. So I think there's probably a little bit potentially of tactical awareness of, right, we're going to have more cars, you've got more positions on Sunday to take points, everything else, like there's obviously added benefit there. But yeah, I wouldn't expect to see it too much going forward. We know that Seb isn't wanting to do too many rallies on the bounce. Cali's obviously got plenty of other commitments that he's doing this year in terms of circuit racing and drifting and everything else. So I think it probably is a rarity, but it is nice to see. I have to say, this is not a criticism of Toyota by any means, because they have no duty to run four cars, but we definitely are noticing the difference of even one less entry at the minute. It does make a difference on the spectacle. So it's great to have an extra car, and obviously filled by a world champion as well, makes it all the more entertaining for us all to watch.
Of course. And that will bring their events to 7 apiece for Ogier and Rovanpera. The odd number of events means that a third car is shared in an odd way, but now that they've got four cars on this round, they should eventually match up and even up to 7 events apiece. With that extra Rally 1 car, and with this event being so familiar to so many, does it bump M Sport back? We've mentioned before in the podcast not far ago that Monty's a specialist event, Sweden's a specialist event, Kenya is, Croatia is almost a specialist event with how tough it is. Does it bring that car down a peg? I know it's a good car, and I know that Adrian Formo's done really well so far this year, but yeah, does it make it tougher for them to get up into the top four, into the top three?
It's an interesting question, because my hunch sort of says yes, but I would have said that at the start of the year, and Formula's proved a lot of people wrong with that. Yeah. But I think Adrian's running third on the road on Friday and Saturday. Well, sorry, on Friday. Saturday depends on Friday. But that is tricky, it has to be said, particularly, as you said, there's so many good drivers behind him. I think what I would hope is that there's no heroics there, and I guess that they stick to the plan that's worked. I know there were times in, I guess, particularly Croatia on the end of the rally, when obviously Formula had an issue on Sunday. He had that amazing power seat win later on to, I guess, recover from that mistake. But I just hope there's no banzai pushing from either driver, and that they just play themselves in it, and I guess use their reliability, which they found this year, and just staying out of trouble to hopefully pick up positions. I think Formo, he's got a bit of experience in Portugal, but obviously everybody else has just as much, if not more. Munster's even lower on experience in good Formo is, so yeah, I think in terms of raw speed, I would be surprised if they were properly reckoning at the very, very front, but they're not too surprised if the end result actually ends up being not too bad, because I think the version that we're seeing of Formol now is far more complete than we ever have. He's both quick, but I guess most importantly, he's very clever now with where he pushes and how he strategizes things. So I could see either being he gets a good position on Saturday and he just banks that and doesn't do anything crazy, or he's maybe not as high up on Saturday as he'd like to be and he pushes on Sunday. Because as much as he'll not tell you he's a championship contender, he still wants to be as high up as he can. So as long as he can cling on to that third place, I think that'll be the target. But yeah, in raw speed terms, I'd be surprised if it's not a bit of a high-end ideal to dogfight on this one.
And he's got a priority to do that and to get up as high as he can in the championship for his future prospects as well, because who knows what will happen with the two leading teams, Toyota and Hyundai, as we go into next year. He's as much trying to get good results for M Sport and himself as he is looking maybe with a bit of an eye to the future as to what might come next year for him.
Look at you with a speculative thought. I love that. But you're absolutely right. I think, yeah, Formula is going to be a driver that's high on many people's lists at this point. From what I understand, I'm pretty sure I'm not sure if it was an offer or if it was a very close conversation, but there were certainly talks about potentially joining Hyundai in a part-time season this year, which obviously he would prefer to do the full season them sport, hence he stuck with that. But I think it's a difficult one for Malcolm and Rich at M Sport, because they've had so many good drivers in that team, but it's very clearly still competitive. Formula has proved that this year, but they just don't have the might and resource of a manufacturer team. So for drivers that start getting better and better, if that alluring call comes calling from a big proper OEM team, it's very hard for them to resist that. So, yeah, but Formula, he's loving his time at M Sport. I think it's very clear he's a very big part of that team. So I wouldn't say he's, and I know you're not suggesting this, but I wouldn't say he's actively looking for a way out. But obviously in the back of his mind, he will know that the better he can do on every rally, he's never going to harm him in any case, whether it's with his standing in his own team or, as you say, trying to attract the attention of others.
Definitely. Let's move to the WRC2 title races. Things continue to just grow and grow in that category. What are you looking at there? There's Solberg, there's Rossell, Greensmith, Paiari. There's the Aussie that we'll talk about a little bit later who might not be at the front. But, gee, I look at the WRC2 and you just are astonished by the entries that they get.
Yeah, there's everyone here, isn't there?
I think everyone.
There's a couple of names. There's Sunderland's there, Loubet's there. I think this is what's interesting about Portugal. And all year it's been a good battle, as always. But I think pretty much anyone that's in contention for the championship this year has entered Portugal and is scoring points. So it's going to be a huge slug match. It's a bragging rights thing, isn't it? And I guess for whoever does come out on top, you know that you've directly taken points of other drivers. Because that's, I guess, the unique thing. And in some ways, it's not the best, but I don't know how else they could do it, given budgets aren't rocket high for a lot of these drivers who are privateers. But WRC2 drivers only have 7 events they can do. 6 of those scores will count. So often you're not actually necessarily competing against your direct rival all the time. So it's a bit of a different situation for them all to be here. So yeah, I think as much as the win is always worth 25, this one's maybe worth a bit extra in terms of guaranteeing a deficit to your rivals. But last year we saw a great battle between Solberg and Greensmith. Obviously there's that controversial donut from Oliver at the end of Saturday's Super Special that earned him that 1 minute penalty, and the fight back was immense. Gus, obviously, I think it was a steering problem of some sort on the last stage, and it was a hell of a drive to keep the charging Solberg behind. So that was an amazing fight. I'd be very surprised if we didn't see something as crazy this year, and there's bound to be attrition. I think with how fast and how quickly these guys have to go against each other, there's going to be a few that are caught out, I think.
You have to drive the Rally 2 cars ridiculously fast to be able to try and win a WRC 2 round, whether you're on snow, you're on tarmac, or you're on the rutted gravel that we're likely to see in Portugal in some places. I think it's good for the sport that there's so many there, and there's clearly the issues that I've talked about on the podcast and you would have talked about elsewhere about the regulation change. But I think things are good in WRC2. And if the regulations stay the same, I don't think there'll be too many people dissatisfied about how WRC2 might roll out for next year. But we'll leave that. We'll park it there. We won't go too far into the maybes and everything like that that comes next year. But one of the guys you mentioned, Pierre-Louis Loubet, You did a long feature with him that's now for free on our Rally Sport magazine website. If you haven't read it already, Luke's done some fantastic work and spoken to Pierre about how he's going about more or less being sacked from the M Sport team. He doesn't have a drive there this year. He's back into WRC2, making his debut this weekend. How was he to chat with? And I was surprised when I read that he wasn't too disappointed about being down in WRC2.
Yeah, that, in fairness, was my biggest takeaway from the conversation as well. And I think I made some gambit at the start of the feature about asking difficult questions, didn't I? But it was one of those that the conversation was really quite good. It was quite, I dare say, like loose and quite open. We know each other fairly well. So I think that obviously helps if you're speaking to drivers. They know you're not trying to catch them out or whatever. So it was nice. We start with the easy stuff, the obvious stuff, and you start rolling into the more difficult topics. And I wasn't sure what he was going to say or how he felt. But I think he's recognised that A, he's still very young. So there's plenty of time to, I guess, get to where he wants to be. But B, particularly with the instability now, with where the WRC regulations are, actually driving in Rally 2 isn't as big a deal as it might have been maybe 5 years ago. It's like, it's not quite the top, obviously, but you just don't know where everything's going to go. So actually, this could be really, really useful experience for him, depending on where the regulations go. We just don't know. And obviously how competitive that championship is now, that's going to be a really fun experience to get in the thick of. And that was one of the things he did say was fighting for, I guess, I know it's not an overall win, but it'll feel like a win. It's not fighting for, last year he was very big on trying to get his first podium, and that would have been an amazing achievement, but there's nothing quite like fighting for first place. And I think a lot of drivers that are maybe building themselves up in WRC, actually, I'm thinking of Greensmith in particular here, to jump back into WRC2 and fight for, a bigger prize. It's a great feeling. Liu Bei was great value, I have to say. I really appreciate his time and his honesty with everything he said, because as you said there, he was effectively shown the door at M-Sport last year. And that's the thing that's difficult for him, I think, is that the team now looks like a better place for somebody like him. Last year with Tanak there and everything, I think the environment was quite different. This year it's more, I guess, less expectations almost to succeed given where they're at in terms of experienced drivers and everything. So, I think he knows he could have flourished there if he was there, but he's not sour about that. He's accepting it and he'll just do what he can this year to try and show everyone that he deserves a place back at the top.
Head to rallysportmag.com to have a read of that free feature that Luke's done on our website. It's a great piece of work and I learned a lot from the piece, that's for sure. It's always exciting to see Aussies abroad. For me, for all the other Australians, it's nice to see New Zealanders across there on the other side of the world, like Hayden Paddon was at the weekend. Lewis Bates, Anthony McLaughlin are there in a new GA Yaris Rally 2 car. It's the one that they'll bring back to Australia and compete in the National Series here, which is great news for us. I don't think they're going to set the world on fire. We've got to be honest there, but it's going to be a great experience. And like we discussed earlier, the time in the car to learn the Rally 2 car, first of all, and then to try and build on that and get some more speed ready for the Forest Rally in a couple of weeks' time will be very important for both of them.
Absolutely, yeah. I almost regret saying stuff about this at the start because we've got less to say about it now. But I think, as you said, it's always, regardless of who it is, anybody that's been competitive in a national championship, seeing them make the step into, I guess, a quote-unquote bigger championship is always really fascinating to see where they lie. But as you say, I don't think the objective for Lewis is to really try and take it to the top boys. There's no way that's going to be a feasible target given his experience deficit in everything in terms of both the rally and the car he's driving. So it's just a brilliant test session in a fantastic environment, because if nothing else, it's just an incredible experience. He'll be hoping he gets more WRC events in the future, of course, but you never know what happens. This could be his one and only chance to do a WRC rally. So he will treat it like that's the case. He will soak in everything he can, knowing that he doesn't have to worry too much about the pressure of where he finishes. And that should enable him to actually just soak in the experience a bit more. And as you say, rally drivers are rally drivers. They're competitive beasts, aren't they? So I think as the weekend goes on and he gets more used to the car and everything, there'll be a little bit of setting himself mini targets of where he wants to be, whether that's getting ahead of a particular driver or just working on his seconds per K deficit, which is a metric that a lot of drivers always use, isn't it? And it'll definitely be a bit of, let's hope we can see improvement throughout the rally. But it's certainly a great opportunity to taking a rally like this while learning a new car around all the engineers that designed the car as well. So any questions, any issues, you can speak to them directly and take that knowledge into Australia the weekend after.
Even if we're just looking at the guys that are in the same car as Lewis will be this weekend, Sammy Piari will be one of the fastest, if not the fastest guy in a Rally 2 Yaris. But the two Japanese drivers who are part of their next generation program in Yamamoto and Kagure are going to be great benchmarks for him because they are great talents moving forward in the world of the WRC. And Lewis, I know Lewis, being a competitive guy, will be looking at those times and the seconds per kilometre as to where he actually stacks up. And I think it's going to be important for him to improve, like you say, and those markers are the ones that he'll be looking at.
Yeah, and it's a good point you raise about, I guess, the next generation Toyota drivers. I'd forgotten they were here in Portugal, but you're right, they are very good yardsticks because they themselves, as much as they know, I guess, more about European rallying than Lewis does, they're probably actually not too different in terms of general experience level, I guess, particularly in this level of car. They've got a little bit more seat time, but it's not massive. So they will be useful benchmarks to see where he's at. And as you say, anybody, like even if he gets a chance to like chat to Sammy about techniques of driving the car and everything, that's going to be invaluable for him going forward. And be interesting to see how much of that he shares with Harry or not, won't it? He comes back.
Yes, they've got a good relationship, those two. So I'm sure they'll share quite a bit of detail about it. And Harry will be over there in Portugal with Lewis, helping him out with a few things as well. I'm hoping to see Lewis quite a bit on the television program. I'm not sure whether he'll be on the All Live too much, but some videos and stuff on social media we'll all be keeping an eye out for. It's almost as though, yeah, we're spoilt this year with Taylor Gill and the Junior World Rally Championship, as well as Australians. We get to follow people pretty often thus far in the World Rally Championship. And for you, it'd be similar when Scotsmen go to the WRC. I'm not sure if there's any on the entry list this weekend, but it's probably a very similar feeling for you coming from Scotland.
Yeah, we've not had many Scottish drivers in the last sort of decade and a half, really. I guess Max McRae's, I guess he's undecided. I think he's trying to be Scottish now. I guess to me, he's both. I think we can both claim Max McRae. but he, I think he's our next hope for sure. But you know, he's got a Scottish co-driver with him as well. I think that's a very sort of, I struggle. It's difficult because you're meant to be impartial as a journalist, but there's part of you inside that when there's somebody from your own country, do you know what it's like? It's like in international tournaments of any kind of sport, I particularly get very patriotic about it. So you can, when everything's go well, you struggle not to feel a little bit proud, I think. But no, I think, speaking of, you mentioned him, Taylor Gill, I just want to give a very quick, I guess, shout out to him and I guess all the rally star competitors, but Taylor and Romet Jurgensen for me have been clear superstars of this program. I think anybody that's followed either of their careers could have seen that coming. But for Taylor to be second in Croatia on, as I say, it's not as the surface he's got the most experience on. So that was a very, very impressive drive. I think it's like buses, as you say, isn't it? You wait for one and then two come along at once. I think he's a very, very big, bright talent for the future of Australian rallying. So I guess it's been a while for you guys as well. I think Chris Atkinson was probably the last regular driver, wasn't he, from your part of the world to be competing at that level. So, no pressure, Taylor. I think there's a country waiting for a new hero, isn't there?
Definitely. Unfortunately, Molly Taylor and Brendan Reeves, though they had a little stint in the Junior World Rally Championship and the WRC Academy. Brendo had a stint a little bit longer than Molly did over the span of the 2 years. Yeah, let's hope Taylor continues on and does what he needs to do to progress forward in the sport, which is, I'm sure, the hope of every Australian that follows rallying. I'm looking forward to following along with Portugal. Is there anything else, Luke, that you need to bring up or you've noted in the lead up to the event that might be of importance to the listeners that they might want to keep an eye out for? The Faf jump's always a good one for those who aren't always rallying followers.
Yeah, the Faf jump has created some very spectacular imagery in the past. It's one of those that I have dreams of wishing I was a rally driver, but it's one of those I wouldn't want to do that stage if I was. I think the pressure would be too much to not mess it up and to make a big spectacle at that jump. But that stage in general, actually, I think there's that famous section of the two sort of gravel dirt roads connect the tarmac, which now has tributes to both Colin McRae and the late Craig Breen. So that's a really sort of poignant and nice section. But no, it's a very good and open question there, Luke, but I'm struggling to think of anything that we haven't covered, if I dare say so myself. I think we've done a decent job of covering the bases there. But yeah, I just think it'll be another entertaining rally to follow.
I think so.
Most of them always are, to be fair. But yeah, there's plenty of interesting subplots and talking points. And I guess the one driver actually maybe just should quickly mention, because we haven't at all, is Takamoto Katsuta, who I think could be in for a big result this week. He's gone well in Portugal in the past. He's not having to worry about anything to do with Toyota Manufacturers Championship because he's not a registered driver for points. So I'm curious to see if that sort of sets him off the leash a little bit and lets him fly. So I'll be following that on with interest for sure.
Definitely. Are you bold enough to make a prediction for the win, Luke? Or are you a mature enough journalist these days to know that whenever you make a prediction, it never happens and it never comes true? So you may as well not make a prediction at all. Or do you have somebody that's in your head that you might think is going to take the win?
I'll be brave. You know what? I'll be brave.
Okay.
Since you've asked me the question, I'll be brave. But I'm going to cop out slightly.
Sure.
I'm going to say it'll be one of the part-time Toyota drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ogier or Robin Pera. I don't know which, but yeah, that's where my money would go if I was a betting man. Would be on either of those two. I'd have to split my bets and hedge my ways, I think, but picking between them would be hard. But yeah, I think road position will be key, and obviously they're both match fit to a degree. They're both obviously superstar drivers, so yeah, I'd struggle to see either of those two being beaten for me.
You can predict one, I'll predict the other. How's that?
That works.
Luke,
we'll split
Barry,
the winnings if it comes in.
Luke Barry, thanks again for your time, mate. It's been great to chat rallying and learn a bit more about Rally Portugal and discuss it as the rally comes to life this weekend. So enjoy the rally and look forward to chatting soon.
Hey, it's Mozzie here. I don't have much experience when it comes to rallying, but Waukesha Racing Services does. And they're available now for your rally needs. They can help you with engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication. No job is too big or too small. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. And you don't need to be an Aussie champion or factory back to be able to. From club to state to national level competitors and car owners, let Waukesha Racing Services help you with your rally needs. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@waukeshawracing.com.au.